Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech, our events we host, our consulting and advisory services, and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, and follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching MedTech Money on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. MedTech Money is an interview-style podcast focused on demystifying raising and investing capital for MedTech companies. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Zapyrus. Think of Zapyrus as your personal sales research assistant for MedTech service providers. Instead of spending hours manipulating outdated lists of companies, let the Zapyrus AI-driven process find you new opportunities to grow your business. If you're a MedTech clinical research organization, design and engineering firm, contract manufacturer, quality or regulatory service provider, Zapyrus is your one-stop shop for MedTech business empowerment. In this episode, our guests, Rachel Robinson, CL Tan, and Oriana Pauline Zogby, and I discuss the companies they are running, the MassMedic Ignite program, how to take advantage of programs like these as an early stage medtech company, surrounding yourself with good people, the timing of when you do an accelerator program, lessons learned along their entrepreneurial journey, common pitfalls, best advice for startup companies, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with Rachel, CL, and Oriana.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Okay, perfect. Rachel, Oriana, and CL, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so this is the first time that I have had three people on at one time. So this won't be the first. But let's start with you, Rachel. We'll work our way to Oriana and then CL. But just an introduction to who you are and what you're currently doing.
Sure thing. So I'm Rachel Robinson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at MassMedic. I'm also the president of MassMedic Ignite, which is one of the things we're going to talk about today. So I can tell you a little bit about MassMedic, just a regional trade association. We represent over 300 organizations in medtech for advocacy, connection, networking, and opportunities.
And I'm Oriana Papanzopi, and I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders at AOA Diagnostics. And at AOA, we're developing a novel platform for the early detection of cancer. And we're starting by developing the first blood test to be able to diagnose ovarian cancer.
And I'm CL Tan. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Phyx Technologies. At Phyx, we're replacing the use of ethylene oxide, which has been regarded as a human carcinogen and required for the sterilization and manufacturing of half of all life-saving and life-changing medical devices made every year.
Awesome. And then going one step beyond that for each of you as well, we'll just go in the same order. It is always helpful for our listeners to really understand your pathway to where you are now. And it's always fascinating to just get a feel for how many people were, you know, physicians who switched to entrepreneurship or who got into the med tech space or engineers. So I'm curious for each one of you, even beyond what you're currently doing, what's your background in the med tech space or not background in the med tech space?
Yeah, so I have no background in the medtech space planned. It was completely fallen into. So I've been working in the industry for, I think about 12 years now. Started out at a product development firm and actually cut my teeth mostly working with engineers and designers. And that's where I really got my first introduction to medtech companies and especially startups. Because startups are the ones who have, I would think, predominantly worked with outsourced development partners in the past. I mean, I think that's shifting and now everybody does, but I got my kind of first introduction to medtech doing that and really understanding some of those challenges firsthand, from fundraising to engineering and design to understanding regulatory, everything. So mine was an accidental falling into that I've absolutely loved over the last, decade or so.
Mine wasn't too dissimilar. So I do not come from an engineering or scientific background either. I actually studied economics. And it was one of my first internships in college where I worked in an early stage medical device company focused in women's health and really got a taste for the industry side of the sciences. I think in my previous life, I thought I might be a doctor. So I'd always had this interest in the sciences, but not sort of not a passion to go down a physician pathway or an engineering pathway per se. So I got a taste of the industry side of things first as an intern. And then from there, just stayed within the industry. I've always worked in either commercial, business development, go to market, sales and marketing type. So really, taking these really exciting technologies and bringing them to the market, to the hands of patients and providers and driving adoption and understanding the challenges that it takes to sort of change clinical practice. And I've worked at all stages of the company, from very early stage employee number one, building a company all the way up until that company exited, to working at very large strategic life sciences companies in very big global roles. So I sort of got to see the experience of small to large. And after our last exit, Anna, Alex, and I, who are the co-founders of the business, we've been working together in different roles at different jobs for the last 10 years. Decided that we wanted to found our own company, focused in diagnostic, focused in women's health. Very sort of big unmet need, and not a lot of people that care about it as much as we do. So, kind of decided that that was going to be our next step, and that's eventually when we co-founded AOA about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so real quick, CL, before you go, we'll get back to women's health. We'll touch on that before we wrap up this conversation, because that's always a really interesting one that we talk about, that it's like everyone's identified there's a problem and no one did anything about it for so many years. And that probably has to do with most of the venture capital money going to
Not women.
male-founded companies. Yeah, and so we could talk about that. We've spent episodes talking about this in the past as well, because it's a fascinating issue, and it really dives into like the understanding the problem. And in some cases, well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. We won't go down the rabbit hole just yet. CL, go ahead.
Sure. So previous to FIEX, I was running my own firm. For about so 10 years prior, I started my first company, and we were really focused on working with brilliant founders, technical folks across a number of industries, including healthcare, basically taking their technology and proving out either one, this is something that we can make a commercial difference impact in the next 6 months, a year, or if this was going to be a 12-year, $100 million investment. And we work with the former, basically doing market development. I would literally be on the phone closing deals, training sales teams, training marketing teams. And so, what had happened, and this was actually quite opportunistic, the beginning of 2020, I got referred a customer who so happened to be the former head of global R&D for Baxter. And he came to me and said, "Hey, I have this self-sterilizing materials technology. What do you think of it for a COVID containment application in China, where my family is originally from?" And so, we took a look, we started working, got a lot of interest from the Chinese FDA, from strategics. And as a Boston-based company, once COVID started to the cases started to pop up here, we really discussed how there's going to be no opportunity to make a difference unless we make a difference in our own backyards. And what was so surprising about the whole process is I had never seen such engagement from any market as we had seen from med tech. And what they had said overwhelmingly was, "We have sure we think this could be a COVID containment application. It is a major problem. But we might not be able to make medical devices in a couple years because of what's happening on the sterilization side, and really no one is working on it with a substantially scalable or appropriate solution." And that's why we started FIEX, but I think I have a perhaps a non-traditional route relative to what you typically hear in med tech.
Yeah, very cool. That's why I always ask, because it's always, you'll talk to the ones like, again, physicians who were in the line of duty who said, "This does not work. We got to figure out a solution for this." And those make sense. But then there's a lot of people who come to the industry because they want to make a difference in the world.
and for patients. And so I like to always ask that. So it's super cool. So one of the reasons I wanted to have the three of you on is to talk about something we haven't talked about at all on the podcast yet, which is, you know, early stage companies go through programs and resources. And I think a lot of times a mistake I see is the startups we work with, you know, said, I didn't get anything out of this program. I went through program X and didn't get anything out of it. And then, you know, part of it's like, okay, you know, I maybe they designed it poorly, right? But that's probably not all of it. And maybe you just didn't understand how to get everything you needed to get out of it. So I wanted to talk to you all because this is a really interesting story. So Rachel, MassMedic, Oriana, and CL, you went through one of the programs there. And that's called, was it called the Ignite program, Rachel? Is that what you had said earlier?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we start there, Rachel? Tell me about the Ignite program, the idea behind it. And then, you know, I'd love to hear from Oriana and CL on your experience about that and how maybe you internally at your company said, we need to make sure we get everything we can out of this. So let's start there though, Rachel.
So I'll start with the disclaimer that no feeder program, no accelerator is perfect. So I will say that. Right. I think it's really hard to put together these programs. But when Ignite was started, actually, it was in 2004. So we got to go all the way back to 2004. It was started as a program that really was focused on getting startup companies or inventors into hospital to really go and look for unmet needs. Ran for 10 years, spun out some really incredible program companies like T2 Biosciences, Access Vascular. I think Abiomed was even involved at one point, although that was a very different involvement. I think they just pitched at one point. But so that was kind of the founding of the program. And then it took a break from 2014 to 2019. And that's when this leadership team of MassMedic decided to try to revamp it. So over the last 5 years, we've taken a little over 50 companies through the accelerator program, which generally runs for 3 to 6 months. And we've tried to help them in a number of different ways. We really wanted to harness what MassMedic had to offer without repeating what every other program does. So we looked at our program and said, okay, how can we provide enough opportunity for startups to harness our community of 300 medtech companies, right? What do these medtech companies have to offer? They have strategic partnerships that they can offer. They have investment opportunities that they can offer. They have consultants and program leaders who will give them free advice. There are lawyers willing to sit down with them for hours at a time and help to consult. So we said, okay, let's put this together in a masterclass program that we can run either in person or virtually and allow the companies to kind of pick and choose which classes they come to. Nothing is mandatory, but say, okay, here is this curriculum of opportunities for you to get all the free advice in the world. You choose what is going to be most helpful for you, and then we're going to help you try to be as successful as possible. And that's really the crux of the program. We're not going to be the end-all be-all for everyone. It's not going to be the right fit for everyone, which is why we only take a few companies every year. There's no cost at all for any of the companies who want to participate. There's no application fee. There's no fee to participate. There's no fee afterwards. In fact, we try to give away money when we can. So we have sponsors and the state of Massachusetts who support this. So with the last, you know, 5 years, we've brought in about $200,000 in sponsor revenue. We've given away half of that money to our companies as a prize opportunity for certain groups. And then the other half we've used to fund the program. So we are incredibly thrilled with the way it's worked. I've been so honored to work with these companies. And of those 50 companies, we did the math last year, 45 of them are still in business. So 3 years out, they're still kicking. And they've gone on to raise over $100 million in follow-on funding just post-program. That is not on us. That is all their work. But we've been able to take a $200,000 investment from sponsors in the state and help those companies get where they need to go, even in a small way. So it's just been a really wonderful experience.
So see, this is the statistic of 45 out of 50 are still alive is crazy, especially 3 years out. So that's really cool. Yeah. And I think too, you know, it's like I said, it's difficult because like you said, it's a free program, right? There's no, there's no catches here. So, you know, you could put people in the right space to network and meet each other and hopefully something fosters from there, but then making them do that's one thing. And so the fact that you've been successful with getting companies in front of each other, but then them being able to realize, oh, this is a really good opportunity for me to get some free information. It's really impressive. It really goes to show who you have in your network as well. Because I think that's some of the problem too, is when you do things like this, if you're not really intentional about who you're bringing in from that advisory standpoint, you know, it could really ruin a program rather quickly. If the entrepreneur has spent 30 minutes value, right?
Spot on. And I would say, you know, we've had this program now for several years. We have four sponsors who've been repeat sponsors the entire time. So we don't bring in a ton of people and have them pitch to the companies. We bring in a couple of trusted advisors and say, okay, you guys are experts in this space. Put together something that is going to be beneficial for these companies. Yep. And then when they're ready, they will potentially reach out to you or they'll ask questions.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so Oriana and CL, we heard about how the program was designed or should run. If Rachel was not here, no, I'm just kidding. So what is that? What was your experience with this program? What year did you go through it? What kind of value did you get from it? That sort of thing. And so CL, we'll start with you this time because you were last each time to start. So you start and then I'd love to hear from Oriana.
So actually Oriana and I were in the same program. That's how we met. And you know, one of the greatest things coming out of great programs is the folks that you meet, right? And there's nothing like the friendships and the camaraderie between founders. So that's, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't highlight that. My experience, that was the year that it was totally virtual. And, you know, I had a great experience with the MassMedic team even prior to being accepted in the program. So we're not your typical medical device companies. So when I was getting to know the MassMedic team, you know, one of the questions I had is this going to be a good fit for a company like ours, right? Our customers are the medical device makers, but we're not a medical device, right? And even right off the bat, I remember Rachel, you and Brian got on a call with me, just really honing our messaging, being extremely helpful for no, you know, no apparent reason other than to be helpful. And I was really struck by that, right? As a founder, I'm always looking to surround myself with people who are, you know, give to give, right? That's something that we believe in our company as well. And so my experience in the program was just phenomenal. It's really put us on the map. And specifically, and Rachel, you know, apologies. It wasn't necessarily the information that we learned. It was the people that were giving the information that after that one session, you know, I got to follow up with and really became champions of the company, right? Making connections where it was just, they didn't need to, right? Extending their goodwill to, you know, I know that Helen got us a place, an article, a feature in one of the MedTech publications. And that really unleashed it. Huge amount of inbound interest from customers, right? We ended up, you know, going from one to 10 customers and a pipeline of 45 NDAs signed, right? So that was very significant for us. And, you know, I could tell you at great length the individuals that have helped us, but, you know, what was really extraordinary and set a bar for me looking at programs afterwards and communities afterwards was how willing are the folks in the community to give, right? I have to work to earn your trust, of course, but if you're there to really help move the ball forward, this is exactly where I want to be. And that's what I found with Ignite.
Awesome. Oriana?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think, so we went through it the same time that CL did. We were the cohort of summer 21. We were, the company itself was about a year old. We were mostly non-dilutive funding up until that point. We were just starting to raise our seed round. And the reason I say those is because I have done a number of accelerator programs at this point, and I think the time at which you do them is one of the most critical elements that nobody talks about, because there are so many incredible programs that can, you know, bring to you a network and classes and courses, etc. But for us, having done one that summer, which is we were basically a baby, to then a year later where we were a teenager, very similar program, I got almost nothing out of it the second year around. And it was designed in the same, and probably because, let's tell Rachel, Mathematica is a lot better, but it really, you know, it is. I won't name the other one, but it was in a similar format, which is like, here are the courses, take what you will out of it, which I very much appreciate as a founder who is like split between so many things. And here's a phenomenal network. But I think the time at which you as a startup are, you need to be really critically thinking about, is this the right program for me at this time, at this stage? And for us, that time with the Mathematic Ignite program was perfect. So we are three different co-founders. We didn't all go to every session. We divide and conquered. And so anything that was around strategics or fundraising or negotiations, I was there. Anything that was around regulatory or reimbursement, Anna was there. Anything that was around operations or clinical or finances, Alex was there. So really, you know, the Ignite program giving us that flexibility to come to the courses that you feel most relevant to, send, you know, anybody from the founding team is, again, was super helpful. And then as CL said, sometimes the content was spot on. Sometimes it was like, okay, I'm going to need this for 6 months from now, but I know who I can ping about to talk to about this. And again, developing that network. And then the other thing that was phenomenal for us was the mentor that was assigned to us. So Anne, to this day, I still talk to her. Like, she owes me nothing. I am no longer a part of the program. She has zero obligation. But she has become a mentor that has extended beyond the program itself. And we go through a good process of like matching, like sending our kind of requests and then Ignite evaluates. And so there's a good amount of effort that's done there to pair you with somebody that is going to be the right fit for your business. And I think that is instrumental because, you know, you formed a relationship with that person that I, you know, extended beyond the program itself. And then as CL said, the friendships. So, you know, it extended past the program. Like, we hang out now, or we shoot shit about how hard it is to be a fundraiser, to be a founder and fundraise in these times, or like things like that. And so, you know, I think that's one of the greatest benefits of going through one of these programs. And again, timing, like ideally the other startups are kind of in the same time as you are as well. So you'll go through your cycles together. You'll go through your growth spurts, you know, together. There's variation amongst everybody. But yeah, I think that's also really awesome. And then the last thing I'll say, Mathematic is regional. And I think that really helps a lot in that. So we started as a Boston-based company. We've grown a little bit. We're sort of an East Coast-based company now. But the fact that the whole network and the support is regional to where you are, even if our year was virtual, I think also really helps a lot because the ecosystem of, yes, that's growing and that's changing. And it's wonderful that we're kind of growing beyond that. But also at the same time, when you're going to your networking events or your local happy hour, it's like you're continuing to cultivate that ecosystem within your environment, and it continues to spread. And the consultants and the program and all the people that were involved in the program, we're all local as well. So it also, it kind of really helps foster that Massachusetts ecosystem that is so rich in medtech and life sciences, and helps like connect people and bring you together, especially when you're an early stage company that's starting from the beginning.
So there's I think I have five things I wanted to touch on between the two things you guys said here. So the first one is the give to give. I love that phrase because I think, you know, when you're an early stage startup, especially when you're out building your company, your success and why investors become attracted to your business is not because of the solution or technology you have. It's the fact that you're solving an unmet need or a big problem, and then your team, right? And so a good way for a startup company who just doesn't have a lot of resources is to also want people who have a similar mindset of give to give, and that they're going to be there for you. And so you cultivate a really nice team that way. So I love that phrase you use there. I do want to ask Rachel about the timing of the program, but the other couple things, the mentorship piece, amazing. The other entrepreneur, if me personally, in starting Project MedTech, having quarterly calls with other entrepreneurs who are going through similar things is so valuable, because being an entrepreneur, running a company, can get very lonely very quickly. And so to be able to talk to, for you two, right, to be able to talk through the growing pains of your company or how one's handling something over the other, it's things that you can't read about. Generally, it's you going through that where you learn about. So I just think that's such a underestimated, maybe not for MassMedic in Boston, but like if you looked at other areas, we'll pick on Ohio somewhere, right? Like Columbus isn't known for med tech, but if there's a program where you could put five med tech entrepreneurs together, it's a really big deal because they're going to go through similar experiences together. So I think that's a really big thing to look for if you're a startup out there who isn't lucky enough to be in Boston or in Massachusetts. If you're other places, you know, try to find that where there's some similar technologies to what you're doing, because that does matter.
And add to that, I think what you get from developing those founder relationships is to talk about things people don't talk about openly. Like the two of us will send each other emails, and I was like, hey, somebody wants to do this with my board. Have you seen this or have you seen that? Like, people don't write blog posts about that. Investors don't talk openly about that. Founders to founders do. Like, have you experienced this? Have you experienced that? Or like the things that like nobody talks about openly that we all wish we knew, because somehow everybody finds out eventually, but nobody's open about it. Or like even amongst the two of us, like I have a kid, and like eventually, you know, amongst the cohort, others wanted to have kids as well. I was like, well, what was it like for you? Again, things people don't talk about, right? And so a lot of the time in developing those founder relationships is because the access to information that you get from each other, you don't find in other places.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more with you. The other one was regional piece. And so I actually use Boston in a lot of my discussions with startup companies, because we have a lot of companies we work with that aren't located in Boston or San Francisco. And so, you know, I just tell them, I'm like, it's very important for you to get connected to the broader medtech ecosystem, because, you know, the joke is if you're in Boston, you go outside and you talk to five random people, two of them might be in medtech or health tech in general, right? But that's not the case like in Cleveland or Columbus or, you know, wherever else, right? And so, but the concept is that it's very important for you to get connected to those people who are going to open up the broader ecosystem to you, because it's really important for you to get to your next level, to be networking with those individuals who can help do that. So two questions to you, Rachel. One is actually going to be on this regional one. So while it, on the appearance, it seems easy, right, to say, hey, we have such a great ecosystem, but getting that ecosystem engaged is probably a lot harder than one would think. So I'd love to hear how you did that. And then the second thing is timing of the program. I think, Oriana, you brought it up, the right timing. What do you see? Do you see people be too early, too late? So both of those things.
So I'll start with the second one first, because I think it's a great point that Oriana made. We're looking for the quote unquote babies, as she said. So typically when we put out our, you know, application process, we say we're looking for companies who've raised less than $2 million in diluted funding. So we want early. You can have as much non-diluted funding as you want, grants, SBIRs, everything. Great. That shows so much progress. But we don't want companies who are coming in who've raised $5 to $10 million. Not because there's anything wrong with that. It's because we can't really help them. At that point, they're asking for different conversations than the one that our community can offer. So if you've raised less than $2 million, you're perfect fit. Now, we're still going to talk to you and say, okay, what are you looking for? Let's make sure it's not a waste of your time and our time. But we're going to try to make sure that that program is a good fit for you. And if you're in that space, that's probably a good place to start. And then from the community standpoint, I actually cannot say that it's been hard to get the community involved. So MassMedic is a 26-year-old organization, right? So we've got an outreach of over 11,000 folks who subscribe to our newsletter every week and engage with us. And then we've got over 300 member companies. every single person involved with this program outside of our organization is volunteer, or they've even contributed money to sponsor the program. So it is not hard to get these folks to say, yes, we will give of our time. And this is actually a perfect opportunity for me to say thank you to our four big sponsors, Alira Health, Wilson Sonsini, Boyd Biomedical, and sorry, having a little bit of a brain fart because I have a cold, and T-Gene Pharma. They're wonderful. So these are our four groups who provide legal consulting, regulatory and reimbursement. They provide med tech consulting and say, okay, this is how you get a product into market. Additionally, that community we've set up over the last year, because we were able to go fully in person with the program this year, what we call Ask Me Anythings. We literally bring our startups into a med tech founder's office and say, there's no cameras, there's no one listening other than these startups right here. They're going to ask you every question they can possibly think of, and they want an honest answer. They want the, it's going to scare the crap out of your response, if that's the real response. And we do that with investors. We do that with founders. We do it with strategic partners. We do it with consultants and say, look, this is their time to ask you any question. And they are so willing to give of their time for that. But that doesn't only exist in Massachusetts. It's just that we've built it up so much so far in Massachusetts. It can exist other places. The other piece I'll say too is, you don't have to be in Massachusetts to take advantage of it. So this year we actually took another international company. They were able to come over for the 3 months that we ran the program in person and be a part of it. But there's no regulation that you have to be in Massachusetts in order to really take advantage of the program and the community. We just serve as kind of a gatekeeper for that and say, okay, here's how we get you linked in and get you connected.
Very cool. And that, does that apply to other companies in the U.S. as well, in different states that they can still
absolutely
take advantage of?
So I think of our program that CL and Oriana were in, six of the companies were in Massachusetts, six were not. So it's absolutely not a requirement, and we can make it work. We've taken companies from all over the world. We can make it work however works, but it's just, if you put into it and you give it and ask for what you need, you will get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, too, you mentioned things exist in other places as well. It's not just Massachusetts, but to brag about you all as well is, it does take, you know, because we watch it take place in other areas. It takes not only groups like MassMedic, and it also takes the industry working together and not, you know, where you see things fail is when people get very, hey, that was me that did that, not them, right? Instead of just, hey, we're working in the same direction here, let's do this together, right? But you do see this in other areas. I've seen it happen as well, where people are a little hungry to stake their flag in the ground and only their flag rather than working as a team.
Yeah, I think it just depends too on what you're getting out of it. Yeah, it depends on what you're kind of putting in and getting out of it. So one other thing I would say real quickly is, there's no one program, right? Do all of the programs if they make sense for you. Like this, our program is not going to be the only program that you do. Hopefully it's a feeder program for the programs that are looking for companies that are in that teenage phase that are going to go on and do bigger and better things. So as you do your research, look at all of them and figure out which one to do at what time. Don't just say, I have to do one and that's the only one I'm going to do. See what you can get out of each one of them.
Couldn't agree more. And I think it really, understanding at what stage each program will be beneficial to you. Like we ranged from MassMedic, and then we did Massachusetts Life Sciences Center and Mass Next Gen, which is a grant that kind of feeds into a mentorship as well. When it was time to actively fundraise, we did Y Combinator. Like when it was time to do something else, we did something else. And so it, like, there is so much value in these programs. If you are ready to put in the work to get what you need out of it, like, again, I think it's been said here, don't sit around and expect these programs to hand you a company or to hand you X million in checks. You have to be willing, able to do the work to get out of it, but also you need to be at a stage in your company where the program makes sense for you.
And CL, yeah, you've had a great helpful. Experience with that lately with MedTech Innovator, right? That's exactly what you did, right? You worked the program.
Oh, part of the-
she won this year, so
she won it, but she's all the whole thing. All the intermediary prizes, she won them all. She took everything home.
How are we 32 minutes and 45 seconds in and this has not come up yet? It wow, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So
let's hear about
to
this.
Rachel's point, yeah, to Rachel's point about it being a feeder, right? So we had actually, you know, we got a lot of traction towards the end of MassMedic Ignite, thanks to the amazing mentorship that we got. You know, we were talking about some folks that we all knew in MedTech. So both last year's MedTech Innovator winner was also someone in the program in Ignite at the same time. Sandra Salgada of Alba Health. And she and someone else in the MassMedic community recommended that we apply for a MedTech Innovator. And actually, we had applied the year before. Now, in hindsight, I realized that we were actually too early for them. Great place for MassMedic. But all of the traction that we got from MassMedic was perfectly perfectly positioned us to have a very strong application as well as referrals into this next community, right? And the things that I noticed worked so well in MassMedic, be with the right people, find the right community that believe in just giving and spend a lot of time building trusting relationships. That's all we did during MassMedic and also what we did in MedTech Innovator. And so it was quite an honor to get selected to the final stage. And, you know, for us, it wasn't so much like the prize, yes, was amazing. And I will never, you know, say don't go for the prize. But for us, it was a real opportunity to then, you know, have a simultaneous conversation with 300-400 people at AbbVie who are the leaders in our industry about this problem we're solving that's impacting everyone. So, you know, that was just, you know, an amazing experience, but that would not have happened had I not been part of MedTech Innovator MassMedic when our company was the right size for MassMedic. Yeah.
A great example. This is a good example of knowing what program you're right size for. So we had Paul Grand on episode 32 of our MedTech Money series or somewhere around there. They kind of get blurred together a little bit. We've got so many, but yeah, he kind of talked about that program. So that's fantastic. That's super exciting. So CL and Oriana, I want to ask you, we'll start with you, with both of you first, and then we'll go to Rachel. But in your current experience, what are some of those key areas of focus that you kind of look back and say, thank goodness we took reimbursement super serious at this stage, right? Or so I want one positive of something that you did right and you just highly recommend all startups do this. And then one thing where maybe you spun your wheels a little bit or you kind of tripped up over. And then I want to go to Rachel, similar to last time, where Rachel, you see so many of these companies. So what are some of those common pitfalls, then also common things they get right a lot? So CL, Oriana, I wish everyone can't see this because this is a voice podcast, but they both have very pondering faces right now. And so whoever wants to go first.
I was really, really thinking. So I'll start with what I think sort of hit us at the right time and we took into the business was really understanding the different avenues to capital. I think when we were first thinking about starting this business, it was like, okay, venture capital. But through both MassMedic as well as the right advisors and mentors, it was from the very, very earliest of days, understanding the diverse sources of capital from grants to foundations to competitions to individual angels and then angel groups and then venture capital. Like there is a whole, and I haven't even named them all, there's a whole variety of sources to money, some which dilute you more than others, some which bring in mentorship, some which bring in things other than capital. And I think from the very early days, having done a few programs, we really tapped into that well. So we have a very diverse set of capital, but also for us, what was really important is that we have a really diverse cap table, from having really focusing to having women, international, like just diverse source of people around us, to having foundations that believe in the cause, that are rooted in our belief in women's health. So I think that's something that we really did well. And I would encourage everybody to do is don't start a company and just think you have to go out and raise from venture capital. Like really, really work hard, spend the time on those applications and those competitions and those grants, because there's a lot, you know, that you can gain from that. And then one thing that we've struggled with, which Rachel, you touched on, but we didn't talk about in our program, and nobody has a module of this in their program, which is a lot of startups outsource their development. And how do you effectively manage that? Where you don't have the scientists in-house, but you need the science to run as if it was in-house. And I have done so many programs and nobody does a module on that. Like, how do you effectively outsource development? Because it's a small startup, you don't have the capital nor the economies of scale all the time to build out your own lab, especially when you're in proof of concept. But when you can't control the work the way that you would inside your own lab, that's really hard. That's really, really hard to meet timelines, to understand root causes of problems when you're not sitting in the lab. And so that's something that, you know, I wish we'd have hacked earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's perfect. I mean, this is the whole goal, right? Is where did you hit a hurdle? And you don't even have to have the answer to it, but just so a startup company who's sitting listening to this podcast right now that is at that phase is aware that, hey, I need to carve out this many hours to think about how I'm going to manage this. So I thought that was great advice. CL?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Oriana on the savviness to understand capital, right? Understand what motivates capital, certain capital, what kind of returns, you know, and how that impacts someone's, you know, as a founder, your narrative. What are the expectations of this person sitting in front of you exploring whether or not it's right to partner, right, and appropriate to partner? And I often wonder, and this is an area where I found the best information is actually from founders who just raised money, right? They have their pulse on the ground and they will tell you exactly how do you get the deal done? How do you back away from the deal, right? All these nuances that I think frankly, and probably because programs, accelerator programs often bring in investors, right? They have one perspective, but certainly an investor's not gonna tell you exactly how to manage them so you can do a deal with it, right? But you know, you explained it quite well. I think for us, one of the most interesting things and most challenging things that we've gone through recently is since the win with MedTech Innovator, we went from a company that was quite, you know, somewhat operating in pseudo stealth to now being very much watched. And so that has watched by competition, watched by, you know, industry at a larger scale. And I don't say that to say, oh, you know, look at us, we're so great. But the reality is from the people contacting us, from what we hear, from the emails that get forwarded, conversations, we've, you know, entered a new phase of the company, right, by virtue of what has happened. And no one also talks about that either, right? Like you don't say, from this month to this month, my company is going to be a baby company. And from this month to this month, it's going to be a teenager. No, there's things that kind of happen. And suddenly as a CEO, it's your job to step up and be a appropriate CEO for that phase. And, you know, obviously there's no right answer for it, but certainly the questions of, okay, well, now we've gone from a company that has worked specifically with our customers and they know us to, okay, now the greater industry knows us and there's other things we need to take into consideration. Who do we talk to? You know, how I can tell some of the folks reaching out to us now, they're, you know, wanting to ride along for the journey, but are they the right people to kind of ride along with us? Those are now questions that we're asking. Whereas before, when you're very small, people are like, oh, you're small. They give you the benefit of the doubt. There's not so much you don't see, you hardly see a large player being interested in a very small company, right? And that just necessitates a whole different set of things and skill sets and stuff as a CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is a great point. So I do want to, I want to touch on the capital raise piece because you both brought it up. This is why we spun out a whole separate podcast series about this, right? Because there's, like you said, angel groups, family offices, high net worth individuals. I mean, there's so many different options, and it's actually, it's another, you know, we have a consulting advisory practice, and we spun out a whole separate service menu for our fundraising strategy where we're helping companies walk through who are you going to raise money from? I think some of the worst advice I hear frequently is it's about shots on goal. And it's like, yes, it's about targeted shots on goal though. Right. I mean, it's not just, we hear a lot of startups come to us and go, we pitched to 300 people. We can't raise any money. Let me see the list. Right. And then you get the list and you're like, I could have thrown 270 of them out before you even talked to them. And so, you know, I think a lot of that is, okay, who do you want to raise money from and why? Do they fit the where you're at in your journey right now? Are they going to be smart money, neutral money? If they're bad money, throw them away right now, right? Have you talked to other companies that they've invested in their portfolio? I mean, there's so much here, and I'm glad to hear you bring this up because people oftentimes just start raising and really it's like a thumb in the air, which way is the wind blowing type of strategy. And it's not the best. So Rachel, hearing what they said, you seeing a ton of companies, is there anything else you agree with? Do you want to tack on to? I'll just leave you the floor here.
Agree with everything. I'm going to say there's two pieces of advice that I would give. Don't underestimate the value of free resources. So both ladies mentioned the Mass Life Sciences Center Next Gen program. Mass Life Sciences Center is a quasi-state organization in Massachusetts that funds a lot of different opportunities for early and late stage companies, but especially for early stage companies and women founders and founders of color. This is very, very important. They supported our program. It's how we got a lot of our money for Ignite to start off. So that's why we've been able to do so much with so little funding. So don't disregard non-diluted opportunities that states offer. So look at Massachusetts and look at the Mass Life Sciences Center. There's a ton of those. The other one is, I would say, be careful of ever making assumptions. Don't ever assume that just because you've done everything you think is right, it's going to work out. I see so many companies make really educated assumptions about FDA, about fundraising, about reimbursement, about product development, about strategy, all of it. You can do everything right, and sometimes you're still not going to get the answer that you want. So don't make the assumptions and try to plan for every rainy day that you can possibly think of. It's really easy to do that early, because you can make a whole list of things that are going to go wrong and plan for every one of them. Gets harder as you raise money and get going with things, but just always try to keep that in the back of your head. Don't make assumptions if you can avoid them. Try to always rainy day plan and just track that it's going to go badly. Who do you want sitting across from you at the table when it happens?
Awesome. I did see you talk about prepare for all the rainy days, and we go through this scenario planning a lot with our startup companies where, hey, we need to talk about it, but it also can't be a focus. So I think there's a short video that's like going viral around the internet where it's the human brain handles negative thoughts in a weird way, right? So like if you're a downhill skier, you don't think the whole time, oh, I got to miss this tree, I got to miss this tree, I got to miss this tree, or you're probably going to hit the tree, right? You got to be aware of the path down and where those things are, but focus on that path through it all, right? I think sometimes, to your point, we see entrepreneurs who they really want to ignore all the pitfalls, or they're thinking too much about them. And there's a happy medium there. So I love that you brought that up.
And I think surrounding yourself with the right people. So I think even, you know, amongst my co-founding team, but then also my board, but then the rest of my team, it's like, choosing the people that are going to work alongside you that are going to provide that balance. Like, you know, I'm responsible for fundraising and I'm fundraising my Series A. And with the markets at the way they are, I can spiral and be like, the markets are terrible. You know, every worst case scenario that could possibly ensue, that this whole business is going to collapse. And thankfully, I have both the right co-founding team and the right board members to remind me that, okay, you have planned every version of plan A to Z to keep this company alive. You can park that now. You know at which points you can trigger that. Now you got to just focus on this mission. Like you said, just ski down the hill. And that comes from surrounding yourself with co-founding friends, but also just your right team that can be those checks and balances for whenever you're like either not planning for worst case scenarios or over planning for worst case scenarios, so that you're always somewhere in the middle.
I love it. So Oriana, I said we'd come back to this, which was women's health. And so CL and Rachel, feel free to weigh on this as well. But my first experience realizing, like directly affecting myself, that women's health has taken a backseat for a number of years was I have a daughter who's two. And so when my wife went through labor, you quickly realize that there's some things that you're just like, this is the best we have, right? Even how we calculate the due date is insane. We talked to Marissa Fair, who so she has a company that uses AI to detect due date and that kind of thing. But back to the story, the first time I realized this is the paddles they hook up to read the heart rate of the baby, and it just falls off constantly, and then the alarm goes off, and like, you know, it's your first, like we have our second on the way. So we know now to look out for this, but it's like, it falls off and you're like, oh, what's going on? Right. And so I just was shocked that this was like the best we had. And then I talked to, I think his name is Neil Ray. Yes, exactly. And started to learn about this technology. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And so you just start to piece this together, but I'm just curious on your experience here, for talking to other people, I understand most of the problem is people just don't understand the issues, right? They haven't lived it. So they kind of are just like almost ignore it. And so I'm curious from your side, how much time do you think about that a lot when you're educating new investors? I mean, how did you get over that hurdle to get funded, knowing that maybe some of those people you're raising money from, I don't know who you raise money from, but some of those people really don't understand the problem. I'm just curious on your experience with this though.
Yeah, I would say very similar. I think there are a number of reasons why we are where we are, which is women's health is severely underfunded, leading to an enormous lack of innovation that leads to the healthcare system not being adequate enough for a number of women's conditions, ranging from anything in labor to women-specific cancers to menopause. And systemically, wealth that comes either from venture capital or just wealthy individuals who are then reinvigorating the ecosystem by investing it, or grant funding, the NSF, the NIH, et cetera, has 99% sat with men who it won't cross their mind. As in my case, like, you know, prostate cancer doesn't usually cross my level of thinking. Now that I have a husband, you know, it kind of does, because I'm like, okay. But other than that, it doesn't cross my mind. And so for me, what crosses my mind is breast cancer, or I also had a child going through labor, etc. So starting there, like, how does innovation start, whether it be in academia and research funding or in industry and innovation? There were not people at the top who had the money to invest in this thinking about these problems. And so we are decades behind when it comes to that level of innovation. That is starting to shift in the fact that you do have more female investors. You do have more female grant reviewers. You do have more people screaming at the top of their lungs about women's health, that is shifting, but that's not more than 5 years old. That's not enough to catch up with decades and decades of capital that has been missing. So it's gonna take us a significant amount of time to catch up, we're on the right trajectory to get there. When we went out to the markets to raise our seed round, we were coming off of the back of good financial markets, right? 2020, 2021 is like a blip in like the radar of an anomaly of good, right? I think we're all seeing that resettle. And at the same time, still super challenging. There were a number of times where, okay, ovarian, how is that different to cervical cancer? Or explain to me why you can't just scope the ovaries through the vagina, or just an enormous amount of education to explain what the issue was. And then to get to the point of like, but then this is also, there's also a really hot ROI to be made here, right? This is not like a charity. You're not investing here because you want for the benefit of women. Like, there is also a tangible ROI that makes this a worthwhile investment. And connecting the two was super challenging. Then up to date, to this day, when I'm raising my Series A, I have been told a number of times, ovarian cancer alone is not an enticing enough ROI. When this is a $6 billion market, okay, we have the market size, we've plotted it all, we've shown reimbursement, we've shown the healthcare system, not enough. We need to show that there's more within the company to make this a big enough ROI, because as a woman's cancer alone is not enough. I was sitting at a panel, I can't remember which one now, and somebody was talking about menopause, and somebody asked the question, but is the menopause market large enough? When every woman on this planet, every single one, will undeniably go through menopause, even if early because of surgery or whatever reason, every woman on this planet goes through menopause. But that's the way people think. That's just, and we spend an enormous amount of time, I cannot overemphasize, an enormous amount of time educating on why women's health markets are big enough, on what the problem is, before we even touch on my solution and my team. Like you said something, like early stage investors, they focus on solution and team. I got a whole lot to do before we can even get there, which is that is an element of education that comes, that goes outside your regular sort of startup ecosystem on idea and team.
Yeah, we spend, when we talk with startups, you know, we talk about problem and team are the two most important things, and articulating your problem is really important. But I think for you, it's very clear there's a few more added steps to articulating the problem to get them understand it. So it's a shame, but yeah, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this, because it's something that we've been pretty intentional about, of when it comes up, allowing people to talk about it on the podcast. Even if it seems like we've talked about it for the last 10 episodes, it doesn't really matter, because like you said, it's going to take a lot more than 5 years to make up for the decades of missed time. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts here too. I didn't mean to put you on the spot or anything like that. So CL, Oriana, Rachel, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'll include links to all your LinkedIns in the show notes, all the companies in the show notes as well. And so that way, if you're listening, depending on what app you're on, up or down an inch, and you can click right through and reach out to them. Hang on for 1 minute. We'll chat offline. But thank all of you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.